This audio recording is copyrighted 2011 by AboutFacts.net and its licensors. All rights are reserved.
Great. I'd like to ask you, I understand that you were the first one to find out what was going on at Pinal Air Park in Arizona. Would you tell us what you found out?
Okay. Now, as far as being the first person to find out at, what was going on at Pinal Air Park, I think that what happened is I was one of the first to put that information onto a video and show people what was located there. Here's how it historically goes. I have spoken to quite a few people who I do trust who live in Marana County and Tucson who knew about, Pinal, but didn't make a connection to the Evergreen Facet, and therefore they're just, you know, citizens. They weren't doing any kind of reporting or anything like that. I will say this. The discovery is this. There were some activists, a very limited amount of activists who were looking, chemtrail activists, who were looking at Google Earth, at some of the photos that are of some airplanes and parts that were being worked on. The planes were had aerosol fitters lined up, stacked up next to the planes, and these planes resembled or looked very similar to some of the planes that they were filming in the sky, the activists. All right, so that's where it started, the discovery, going on to Google Earth and taking a look at that. Now, being that I've been filming for quite some time, I did see the similarities of these airplanes. I also knew and had a background of information on Evergreen, that Evergreen International or Evergreen Inc. was supposedly a CIA front. Now, that I'd heard in with many, many different people I'd interviewed and research I'd done on my own, and that it was linked somehow. You know, a year ago, all we had was it was somehow linked to chemtrails, planes, chemtrail planes, I should say, or aerosol spraying planes. So Pinal Air Park, to start there, if you go on Google Earth, all it talks about is Pinal Air Park. It is a public air park. Private planes fly in there, fill up with gas, go and have a little coffee at the cafe and leave. It's open to the public. It shows a road that goes into Pinal Air Park. So when we set out to go down there, we were just going to go look at the boneyard, okay, just to get a closer look at some planes and some of these attachments to see if we were even correct that this could possibly be a link to the chemtrail planes, because we did know that they do aerosol fitters and remake these planes or make these additions. But a boneyard is basically a parts center, you know, for retired planes, and so we were going to go and check that out. Now, when we, as you can see in the video, we get in the car and we go down there. And it says, you know, on the freeway, Pinal Air Park to the right. And we get off the freeway, and the arrow points to Pinal Air Park. And, you know, we're thinking we're going to a public air park and going to go see the boneyard. And we turn the corner, and 50 yards away from us, our gate is a gate guard and a sign that says Evergreen Maintenance Facility. Hmm. Okay? Which caught me off guard, because I did not expect that this wasn't anywhere to be found in the advertisements of Pinal Air Park. And so the story begins. So we shoot some footage of that and then decide, you know, should we just ask the guard? You know, maybe we're at the wrong side. Maybe there's an entrance that's somewhere around the park, you know, that we're at the wrong place. Because I wanted to go in, our whole game plan was to go into that park and see if we could get next to this boneyard. And by the way, when we're coming down the freeway, we can see all the planes in the boneyard, just like you can see on Google Earth. And so I took footage of that as well. And I also took footage of the noticed, you couldn't help but notice, the couple of black helicopters that were surveying, surveillance helicopters, just going around and around and around the air park. Okay? Mm-hmm. I got footage of that as well. So while we're sitting, you know, we pass it up, and all there are fields and a couple of mines, it looks like, that are closed. And we sort of, you know, we park and decide what we're going to do, because I'm stunned. This is Evergreen Maintenance. Whoa. okay, what do we do? What's our approach? Well, let's just ask the guard a few questions. While we're sitting there waiting, we see Channel 13 news truck drive in the front. And then we think, wow, what are they doing here? This is weird. By the way, that was December 3rd of 2010.
Mm-hmm.
So we do. We wait for that truck to go in, and we see cars coming out. And, of course, one after the other driving off this road, you know, driving down the road. And so we go in. And as you're approaching, there's a sign that basically it's a photo sign. It warns you, warning, that you cannot approach, you can't go in here if you don't have some sort of identification on your car, and that's on it's got a camera right on your car so that they know, you know, you belong or you don't belong. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the gate guard to back it up, an armed guard. So we stop and we say, hi, is this Pinnell Air Park? And he says, no, it isn't. And so we say, well, where's the entrance to Pinnell Air Park? And he doesn't say anything. And we said, well, we're just interested in planes, and we noticed all the planes, you know, here. And he says, we have no planes. And I said, oh, okay. And I said, so what is this? Is this Evergreen? What is this? And he's got a badge with his name, and on the other side, he's wearing fatigues that say Evergreen Maintenance Center on them. And he says, this is Evergreen Maintenance Center. This is a highly secured area. And you must leave. And so I say, is this the government or is this a private corporation? What is this? And he says, it's a private corporation. It's a highly secured area, and you must leave. You must just turn around here and leave, because we've already pulled in, you know, at that mm-hmm. point. And I say, oh, okay. And I said, there's no planes here, huh? But it's Pinnell Air Park. I mean, and of course I'm pointing in the direction of this boneyard. You know, you can see the planes. And I'm pointing at the planes, you know, saying, there's no planes? Well, what are those? And of course now he says very politely that we must leave again. And that he says to us, get this, quote unquote, I've already said too much. I mean, it's like a line out of a movie.
Yeah, right.
You know, I was like, whoa! You know, of course, I write everything down as we, you know, we make the U-turn and we leave. And, of course, I shot photos of that. And then we went across the freeway. This is on the west side of the freeway where the Evergreen is located. And then we went across the freeway to the east side and kept an eye on the facility and filmed some more of the black helicopters. Of course, we did have a black helicopter come to that side of the freeway and kind of cruise around us. We did check on that side, on the east side of the freeway. Our GPS lost the street. That's nothing really unusual, but as you stack up all of this, then it became unusual. For instance, there was an oncoming van, a white van, and it didn't have any markings or anything, but it was an oncoming white van. It pulled over and then got behind us, made a quick U-turn and got behind us. And then at one point we turned going east again on Missile Road, it was called, turned on that, thought, well, that's an interesting name. Let's turn right over here. Again, this is all open desert, and this is a dirt road. And at this point, we have four or five vehicles behind us. And at one point I say, God, I wonder if this is like a coincidence, you know, that we've got these vehicles behind us, and we get down further down the road. And I said, you know what, let's just pull over and see what they do. And, of course, we pulled over and got out of the car and started to walk around and did some more filming. They disappeared. You know, they turned around and left. So I don't know what that was all about. I have no idea. I mean, we already figured since we were at that gate and we were on camera, you know, they've got everything they need. They've got the license plate of the vehicle, et cetera, et cetera. I will say, following that December 3rd, came home and started putting together what is Evergreen Facility Caught on Tape on YouTube, on our YouTube channel. It's called Evergreen Facility Caught on Tape. And released it the morning of December 4th. And then things got weird because now I was getting emails from characters that were claiming to be with the government, saw the Evergreen video, and just miles of strange talk. And when I say miles, I mean these people were writing me 6 and 7 times a day, and volumes, and they weren't saying anything. That's the weird thing. They weren't saying anything. They were rambling on and on and on and on, but not saying anything. It was so disjointed, and there were quite a few of them. And then I got a phone call, all right? I said, hello, and the person said, Roxy. And I said, yes, who's calling? And the person said they were a cousin of mine that I hadn't spoken to in 30 years. He's my godfather, by the way. Mm-hmm. He's in his late 60s. And to make a long story short, he wanted to meet me. Supposedly, he had come down from California, and he'd overshot where I lived by about 3.5 hours driving. He and his wife broke down in Yuma. And would I come and meet them there out in the middle of nowhere? And it took me all of a few minutes to realize that this wasn't my cousin, although he made references and sounded like he could be my cousin because of the age of his voice and a little bit of the local Hawaiian accent going on. It sounded like he could be my cousin, and he made references to the individuals in my family, so I figured it was him. But when I hung up, I immediately called my sister. And I said, you know, is he in Arizona? Do you know if he and his wife are down here? And she said, I don't know. I haven't spoken to him in years. Well, long story short, I call my cousin, who is his sister, and she flat out tells me that's not him. Mm. He's in Virginia right now, moving his daughter out from college to her new home.
Wow.
Right? Wasn't even him.
Wow, that's terrible.
So. Yeah, and they wanted to meet me out, and they were sort of weird, kept it together. But here's the thing. I said, when I was on the phone, I said, can you give me your phone number? And he said, oh, it didn't show up. And I said, no, it shows up as private. Can I get your phone number? Because I've got another call, and I'll call you right back. Anyway, long story short, again, I hang up the phone, and I call that number right back, and it's disconnected, and it was a cell phone. The number's disconnected. Right? And there's a third leg to this story because he also wants me to call the mechanic because their car broke down. And I call the mechanic and it's not a mechanic. And by the way, we looked up this number, and this number is, the military has disposable numbers that they can turn on and off anytime they want. And that's what that number showed up in.
Wow. Well, yeah, it shows you.
They don't know what it is.
You never know what's going on.
Don't you want to know why Channel 13 was there?
Was it really Channel 13?
It was.
Oh, okay. I thought probably it was just the front.
No, it was Channel 13 that showed up.
Okay, tell us why they were there.
And so I looked up that story. You know, I did some digging on December 3rd when I got home, and I couldn't find anything. But a few days later, I came across Channel 13 had gone down to Evergreen, and it was a ceremony with Israel, and the United States was giving Israel a KC-135 Evergreen supertanker.
Hmm.
And that's what that was all about. They were there for the ceremony.
Wow.
To cover the ceremony that never made it into any of the news, you know, on television. And a very tidy article with one photo of the Evergreen supertanker and a couple of other people. And, of course, with the question I had at that point, you know, this is, like I said, December 7th, right around there. I say, the KC-135 supertanker can hold 150,000 pounds of liquid.
Right.
And it is for the is intended purpose, and it can also refuel in the air. It has a capability of refueling in the air. And my question was, wow, is Israel expecting any fires? Because its use is to put out fires.
Mm-hmm.
So just an interesting correlation. It might be a reach to say, and then, you know, a few weeks later, we have the Middle East on fire.
Yeah. Well, I found out something about that penal airport myself, that the British use it supposedly for a certain type of helicopter training. And I was wondering about that. It's not a military airport, supposedly. And it seemed kind of strange to me. Have you heard about that?
I haven't heard about the British. No, I have not come across that. What I do know is that the National Guard is trained there and that the black helicopters are also, they are the CIA, and they do have a whole parking lot full of them. And I did find, but I have not heard about anything with the British, no.
There have been suggestions over the years that our atmosphere was altered by over 1,000 nuclear tests that took place in areas like Nevada and probably a like amount in the Soviet Union. Do you think that this might have affected our atmosphere?
I think it contributes, yes. How couldn't it? Yeah. I think that's very possible.
In support of the theory that nuclear testing has really caused us problems that are being kept from us, it's being said that cattle mutilations are taking place because the government is monitoring the reproductive organs of the cattle to see how all this radiation and unknown elements are affecting them. How do you feel about that?
That is a big can of worms. I've always been interested in cattle mutilations. And I've been to many seminars on the subject matter over the last 25 years, believe it or not, and I've listened to programs and radio shows on it and so forth. I've always subscribed to, number one, that somebody within our government, I never subscribed to that this was extraterrestrial doing this. Because when this first came out in the 80s, it was really pointed at extraterrestrials that were doing these cattle mutilations. I've always subscribed to that it was our military. But what would be the purpose? And, yes, I would think that studying the how these animals are mutilated, if your listeners don't know, you know, how there's no blood next to the bodies, it appears that they're cut with a laser, you know, just perfect cut, and that their reproductive organs, and sometimes they're missing a head as well. The animal's missing its whole entire head. So it's very possible that they're studying the organs, maybe the brain even, to see the brain chemistry, if they're changing, et cetera, et cetera. I have a story on that. I was out in Washington, way out in the middle, and I cannot remember the name of this area, Enumclaw. And a friend of mine was taking care of her mom and dad's farm while they were out in Mexico and asked if I would come up for a few days and help her out. And this very interesting story, while we were out there, I just happened to have come across a mutilation story. And so we kind of got into it, my friend and I. And we went and drove down in Enumclaw to this area that supposedly had, you know, some sort of cattle reported. And so we got all excited, and, you know, I wasn't an investigator or anything. This was just something fun to do, intellectually stimulating. And we drove down a road, with big pastures, and we came across, which I didn't know at the time what that was, hazmat teams. And white trucks, guys all dressed in white, and they were walking. There was, I don't know, seven or eight of them, trucks, and quite a few of these guys dressed in hazmat. I wasn't familiar with hazmat at the time. But we stopped. Of course, I didn't have a camera, and we said, what's going on here? And it was really sort of a big cover-up because we couldn't find anything in the paper. We couldn't find anything about what had happened and who those hazmat teams were and what they were doing there. But it correlated with the inside story that we had on some cattle mutilations. So I don't know. And that was out in Enumclaw, Washington.
Well, one of the interesting things about the cattle mutilations is that when they find the cattle, most of the time their legs are broken. I don't know if you've heard of this. Because they're dropped back there. they're taken away somewhere else and mutilated, and then they're brought back. And there are many witnesses across this country that swear that they've seen helicopters do this, and the helicopters were disguised to look like UFOs.
Wow, really?
I've not
come across that.
Oh, yes, there's a lot of witnesses that say that now.
Isn't that interesting? Well, the development, by the way, that happened in Enumclaw with the small farmers who had, you know, several horses, cows, sheep, ducks, and chickens, turkeys. Her father, the one that I went to, you know, go and help my friend. I'm not naming names for a reason, but he actually ended up getting sabotaged letters from the government. They wanted most of his land, and under the guise of contamination. Mm. And they did that to many farmers out in Enumclaw. There's probably a huge story on it by now. But they were forcing all of these farmers out. And maybe that was relative to the hazmat team that we saw, and maybe it's relative to the cow mutilation story that we heard, because maybe that area was considered contaminated too heavily.
Well, are you aware of the fact that we've lost nuclear bombs in this country?
Oh, yeah, we lose missiles. Yes, I am. I just heard a story the other day about, and forgive me, I have not read the story, and I don't, not too much, but something about 6 nuclear missiles and went out and were relocated, and when they got to the base, there were only 5. That's all I know, 5, or and they started out with 6. But yeah, there seems to be a lot of stories about lost.
Oh, there's one sitting.
As well as
yeah, there's
go
one.
Ahead.
There's
go
one
ahead.
Sitting off the coast, off the East Coast. It's around, I think it's around Georgia. And you know, who knows if these things will ever go off? They can't. They can't find the actual bomb. They know it's in that area.
So would that be like they tested it or transported it or what is that particular information in Georgia?
I believe what happened was the plane that was carrying it went on fire, and they had to drop the bomb. It was set so it wouldn't go off, and they figured they would retrieve it later, but they couldn't find where it was. But they know it's in a particular area there.
Isn't that interesting with all the technology that they have that they can't find it?
The reason I mention this is because with the hazmat team, maybe they dropped a weapon there and they're afraid it's going to go off.
We're looking for it.
Yeah, yeah. It may not be.
I never did hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah, that stuff goes on. I mean, I remember one time I cornered a guy that was, I don't know, early 20s, a few of us in Washington, this is like 1998 or so, and this guy started going on. He was in the military. He was with all his military friends, and we started talking with them, and he had a little bit too much to drink, and so he started telling us stories about lost missiles, about how much they cost, about how much money goes into it, how many they test, and this and that, blah, 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 blah. That was my first sort of, you know, realization that losing these types of warfare products, if you will, actually happen every day.
Well, they do lose quite a bit. But it's the it's the nuclear ones that are the worry, you know.
Well, of course.
There are bases all over this country that have toxic waste on them, buried in them, and people have filed lawsuits. These people were sick and dying, and they filed them in court, and the courts have upheld that they're not allowed to find out what these toxic wastes are composed of. Why do you think that they're protecting this so much?
We see this across the board, that one... For instance, there's a story about, I'll name him, Clifford Carnicom of the Carnicom Institution. When they first had some dust particles that they wanted the EPA to take a look at, and they sent them into the EPA certified return request received, and the EPA, put it this way, it took the EPA a year and a half to even acknowledge the receipt of it. And I don't know that they ever really put that in writing, that they received it. But Carncom Institute followed up on that for a year and a half. They couldn't get them even to the EPA. They couldn't get the EPA to even comment on it. And at one point, the EPA came out and said that due to policy, they weren't allowed to investigate what this dust was that was sent in. So we do have that issue of with the aerosol program, for instance, and weather modification. There is any case that is brought into the light of day is dismissed before investigation.
Right.
That is what we're seeing across the board with anything in regards to contamination. It doesn't matter what level. You can go all the way up to organizations that are in place for, like the Geneva Convention, that are in place for the protection of humanity, yet they're not authorized to look into it. So when you want to bring something into court, into a court of law like this, and so we do know of a handful of people at this point that are bringing this into local accountability. So going to their local environmental protection, not EPA, you know, like for instance here it would be the Arizona Department of Equality, you know,
right.
Water, what have you, you know, equality, whatever. ADEQ would be here, and every state and every county has them. And that is exactly what's happening with just getting samples tested, that they are not required to do that. Yes, they are. And then here's the other aspect of it. They are all of these agencies are in place to do the, you know, balance and check, so to speak, and check and balances and alert, like what you'll see on USD, what is it called, USGS, you know, when there's a hazmat explosion or a chemical explosion or chlorine, by the way, that just keeps coming up over and over and over again, chlorine explosions. But they'll be listed on there, and then, of course, you know, that's the alert to the public. You know, they are there to enforce and guide and alert the public to any contamination that's going on, so that, you know, just sort of like when you see on the news that, you know, don't eat the tomatoes. You know, they have E. coli. You know, don't eat them. You know, it's the same. It's all the same enforcement. Mm-hmm. Yet we're not being told about anything, you know, all of the contaminants you mentioned, and including, you know, the soil and the air quality, and we're not getting, the public is not getting any knowledge of this and not being warned about anything, or just at least guided to understand that there may be an issue even with your own drinking water. I mean, why is there no, you know, in your water bill, something that just lets you know, don't drink your water, make sure you get purifiers, et cetera, et cetera. That the water is so contaminated, it's very unhealthy for you. I mean, I don't understand. These agencies are in place, just like the Environmental Protection Agency. I mean, it's in the name, Environmental Protection Agency. Who are they protecting?
Yeah.
Certainly not us.
Well, don't you think it's a little strange that, let's take the U.S. Army, for example. They went to spent uranium shells for their tanks. Now, these shells make the tank crew sick, and when the shell is fired, wherever they are, the casing goes out into the outside of the tank, into civilian towns and things, and makes everybody there sick. Don't you think it's strange that the government would set up such a, this type of a weapon system, harm its own soldiers and also harm civilians?
I do. I mean, that is the big question for us. And by the way, uranium's a real big one. We're seeing, you know, uranium in Cyprus. Dr. Carolyn Carter has been finding high amounts of uranium in her own blood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And doesn't know where is that coming from. You know, where is that coming from? But what was the track we were on? I just lost my
track. We were talking about spent uranium shells.
Well, and then people being affected by it. Yes, right. we do ask that question, because even with this aerosol program, we're like, are they idiots? I mean, do they have a game plan to escape what's happening? You know, if there is some sort of eugenics going on, or people, or, you know, millions or billions of people are going to die, they being the people in charge, the people creating this, the people creating biochemical warfares, weather warfare, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, even down to what you just explained with the shells and uranium. I mean, don't they care? No, obviously not. There was a scientist, a geoengineer conference that occurred, I think, about a year ago, and a question was asked to one of the scientists, same kind of question, like, you know, do you don't know the side effects of what you're doing right now. What if it goes, the word was awry, what if it goes awry and millions of people die? And they said, you know, a few people in the name of science, you know, it's okay. Because in the end, we're going to save lives. We're going to save, you know, more lives. So in the end, it's okay. And I believe that this is how they sleep at night, honestly.
As if spent uranium weapons weren't bad enough, Hartford Business ran an article that stated that the U.S. Army has now hired a consortium to develop nanoweapons. Do you think that we can fully control these types of weapons, or that they may get out of hand?
I can't even begin to comment other than saying, because I haven't read that article that you're referring to, or that bill, or whatever it is that you're referring to. But I will say this. Is anything in the control of any one human? No. I mean, you can't control these nanoweapons. You can't control this. I mean, I'm sure to a certain degree, you know, the secrecy and the military that protects their secrets, so to speak, of anything, any secret they've got, exotic weapons, what have you, it doesn't leak out to the public. That's pretty across the board, unless it's somebody that's retired like Ted Gunderson from the NSA, who's been, you know, leaking out information regarding aerosol spraying. But other than that, just like with Roswell, you know, when somebody's on their deathbed,
right?
You know, that type of thing. But as far as can anybody control, that's a big word, control. I don't think there's control of anything. That's management, some type of management could be. But as far as control, no. That's a loose cannon right there.
Well, this
that's an accident waiting to happen, in other words.
This is a little off the beaten track, but what do you think of the article that appeared the other day where Congress is investigating whether the military used some sort of mind control on senators and others to get them to approve new weapon systems? Did you read that?
I am familiar with all types of mind control programs, including MKUltra, et cetera, et cetera. I don't see a reason why that couldn't be true, but, you know, it does sound pretty sci-fi when you start talking about manipulation of senators and, you know, congressmen and women's minds so that they would vote yay or nay on a particular issue. I think it's stretching it, to be honest with you, but then, again, I come from the world of anything's possible. You know, so that's the most I could, you know, that's the best I can comment on that, you know.
As one country forges ahead with all different types of deadly weapons that didn't exist a few years ago, other countries feel compelled to do the same. Do you think that we are at fault for starting these weapons races, or do you think we, the United States, or do you think that we're just playing catch-up?
All right. That's a tough one, because anybody that does some history, you know, looks into history of the world and other countries, there's always been some sort of rivalry with catching up to Russia, to the tune of hiring, and Germany, you know, hiring their scientists and bringing them into the United States. I don't know. I mean, I don't know that we're the leader on this, but I think that we are sort of, I don't know, this is just coming from intuition and some of the things that I've read. I think that we are the party. In other words, we're Hollywood, man. We're hip, you know. Mm-hmm. We invite people to these parties, in other words. And I think that we have a great deal of influence on, global representation or a new world order type thing, one globe, one political party, or one political governing situation for the entire planet. I think we have a great deal of influence, but I think that as a United States, we've been infiltrated, so I don't know that that's necessarily representative of the true United States. I think that am I making sense?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You're saying basically that there is a government within a government, and they are controlling us. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Yes, that is correct. A shadow government, if you will. Yes, that is correct. I think that the United States government, the true United States government, was hijacked a long time ago. It's very difficult because we're talking in multidimensional language now. The what we call the United States or the United States government or the commander in chief is no longer representative of its people or the Constitution or what we are, we being we the people or the United States of America was prior. I think that we are not operating in that field anymore. And are we the leaders? I wouldn't know, because we have, like I said, so many infiltrators into our own government, in our militaries, et cetera, et cetera. I couldn't even begin to tell you. That's a labyrinth in itself.
Do you believe that certain nations or corporations are allowing fresh water to become even more scarce so they might better control other countries?
I do. I think that that's another just huge. There are some articles that refer and had been for a couple of years that water was going to become the new blue gold, the new gold, as oil is black gold. It was a commodity. It's a commodity that. They can make a lot of money on. If you limit the uses, you limit the availability of it, just like with any other commodity, the price will go up, and that's a faction, and that's a way to do it. And so you start talking about scarcity and then raising prices. For instance, Arizona plans on going up 150% in the price of water over the next 5 years. They already raised it twice, once in 2010 and once in 2011, and there'll be another hike in the price, if you will, in 2011. So, you know, as far as that, what's being driven, if your listeners want to look into T. Boone Pickens.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Look into his story, look at what he's just acquired as far as water goes and waterways go in states that allow you to own the water, because there's many states that don't allow you to own the water. Just look into some of his raw tactics at this point, if you will. And yes, it just becomes another commodity. At the very top of this list, when you're talking about agriculture, air we breathe, water we drink, housing, money, even, you know, we got hijacked on our money in 2008, you know, 401ks across the board down 50, 60, 70%, if not to zero. We got hijacked on our houses. We got sold bad loans, bad banks that are, you know, corporations that are, you know, in on the inside with the United States corporation government, in other words. The whole lifestyle, if you will, for instance, if we just want to talk about our country, has been majorly augmented.
Absolutely.
Okay, the whole lifestyle, the whole dream of being an American and living the American dream, you know, which is a really huge catchphrase. has been altered dramatically. All right. Basically, to be a United States citizen today is, a very different energetic than what you were when you were a citizen in 1949. It is a huge difference about where your rights are and what's being controlled. All of these areas of water, food, money, transportation, which includes oil, all of it is all being controlled. I think there is I know there's an absolute agenda to control everything. Once you control, and that's hence the document controlling the weather by 2025, you know, a military application regarding aerosol spraying. It's all about control. If you can control what we eat, what we drink, what money we spend, what gold we want to buy, what house we want to own. And then even when we do own the house, there's state laws that say, but all the minerals go back to the state. If you find minerals, if you find, you know, a 2,500-year-old Buddha on your property, better turn it in. You know, it's all control. And really, in the existence, when you're a human being living in the United States of America right now, a citizen of the United States of America, you really own nothing. And when you brought up the mind control factor, that would be another, you know, voyage for them to own our minds. And I think they're systematically achieving that by means of propaganda through news media, through anything that's on television and in the movies, for instance, or by repetition. And you know what repetition is? Repetition is brainwashing. So that is a form of mind control. Brainwashing. So own your mind, own your body, own everything, and then disconnect us spiritually from this planet and from each other. What do we have? We don't have a body of people to operate from anymore. We don't have the power anymore.
We just recently found out that taking geothermal energy out of the ground can cause earthquakes. Why do you think that we never hear about taking oil out of the ground can cause earthquakes?
We do. We heard about it in the Gulf. That was a big, big red flag in the Gulf when, you know, it was bleeding so profusely of oil in millions and millions of gallons. And when they couldn't stop it, they couldn't cap it, that was a contention. That did come up. That subject did come up especially where the Gulf of Mexico is located, and the tectonic plates, et cetera, that did come up. But it's why isn't it a concern? I think it is a concern. But, you know, remember that right now, through via the media and via what we are experiencing, especially in the United States and globally, is I think humanity has been whiplashed right now. There's whiplash. There's media whiplash going on because there's too much happening all at once. And I don't think that any particular citizen can focus on all of it all at once. I mean, you can't, because everything has layers and layers and layers of controversy versus the truth versus lies, disinformation. No one knows what's going on anymore. So, I mean, as far as pulling oil out, yes, you would think that, especially at that rapid-fire rate of pulling oil out, that it could cause something. I mean, you had Richard Hoagland talking about the bubble, the methane bubble under there, and that the floor of the Gulf was going to collapse, et cetera. It never happened. It didn't happen. And if it did happen, we don't know about it. But and that's the other thing. You know, could the oil companies already have signs of certain geometries that are changing, or geophysical underneath the ocean that are changing, and they're already privy to it? I mean, they were privy to the explosion of the rig prior to it exploding, so why would they have, you know, data that supports that there could be some changes going on the planet under the seabeds, let's say, or collapse, possible collapse, or causing, you know, who knows? Who knows? I can't help but think that this planet is so about money and control that all the rest of this is just it's a non-issue for them.
Why do you think that the former U.S. administration denied the existence of global warming when most mainstream scientists believed in it, and the evidence of melting ice at the North Pole bore it out?
Well, what's the question? What do I think about it?
No, why do you think that the former U.S. administration denied the existence of global warming?
I haven't a clue.
You have to wonder what they think they could get out of it by denying it existed, except for the fact that maybe people would be allowed to pollute more, you know?
I don't know. I don't know if that's under cap and trade issues or, like you say, the pollution issues. I wouldn't know. To throw the public off, I guess. You know, I mean, you've got scientists on the one hand saying we got a global warming coming, in Al Gore, the poster boy, et cetera. And then you've got, you know, Ice Age coming.
Right.
You know, which one is it? Which one is it? And maybe, I mean, I've thought of this before. If we are altering our atmosphere, and we are altering, or we've already succeeded in altering it, and I mean, when I say we, I mean man, via a good portion of it being the geoengineering, if we are responsible for that, and we've altered something so heavily, we wouldn't even want a clue going in that direction, would we? Because the accountability would be so huge, okay? It would be so huge. People could sue. You know, there would be a lot of money involved, and a lot of people would win if you were, you know, if they proven to modify the weather, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know, because, you know, with this global warming faction, something that I came across and discovered was that they're heating up the clouds with these programs, with these weather modification, anywhere from cloud seeding, et cetera. It's a story for another day, but they are heating up the clouds. If we're in a global warming, why are they heating up our clouds? Why are they insulating more heat? It all doesn't make sense. Maybe it's an accountability factor, you know. I don't have an answer for that. I don't have an answer for most of what the United States comes out with.
Do you think that
you know,
anything,
as far as statement?
Do you think anything will change under the current administration?
Well, it certainly changed when we elected Obama, didn't it? It's just not the change that people expected.
Yeah.
See, the question isn't will it change. The question is what will it change into.
Well, yeah.
This is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you noticed any types of changes?
Yeah. Sure. We're on the fast track to somewhere. Because since he's come into office. And it's not Obama. Let me just say that for the record. You know, it's not. I don't look at one man responsible for everything. You know, there were things prior. He inherited, you know, the debts, so forth. I love the story in Wisconsin where, you know, the Democrats took off and went to Illinois because they didn't want to continue the voting. I love the fact that people are standing up for their rights, for the union, et cetera, bargaining rights in Madison. What's going on? You know what I think? Change. I think that change has been in place for many, many years. Like I said, our true government, you know, was hijacked a long time ago. That's just my opinion. But I think what's starting to happen is they've stepped it all up. The game has been stepped up, and that's why we're seeing one problem after. I mean, just truly, more than I've ever seen in my entire life, honest to God, with bills and laws and this and things getting hung up. And point being, I think transparency is starting to occur. I think that people are starting to catch on. When I say people, I mean the citizens of the United States. I think they're starting to catch on to the dog and pony show.
I hope you're right.
I hope I'm right, too. And, you know, some people say to me, Roxy, there's so many people who are not in tune to this at all. And I say, well, that's why we need to keep spreading the word. Or that's why we need to keep having programs like this one that you've, you know, allowed me to have a forum to speak about these things, Ken. And I so appreciate it. So this is what we do day in and day out. You know, this is very interesting. I was talking to Michael Murphy from One of the World of the Spring. And I said, you know, Every show, I try to give some tips on activism. Activism, all it means is take your thoughts and turn them into action. It's not a bad word. It does not mean terrorism. It does not mean revolutionaries. It means action-oriented individuals. So become an activist in the area that's closest to your heart, whether it be the geoengineering, whether it be animal rescues, whatever it may be. Do something for this planet. And I said, and do it as often as you can, daily. Do it daily, to educate those around us. And he said to me, and I'm in the same boat with him, we do this, we have given up our lives, and we do this 24/7 now. We are volunteers. And he said he doesn't see any other reason to be alive on the planet than to be doing this, what we do.
That's very nice.
Well, it's a reality. You stumble into it when you start, going down the rabbit hole on something, and then before you know it, you realize you're doing it 2 hours a day and 5 hours and 10 hours, and before you know it, you make a stance and you say, man, I need to do this. And it's not a crazy thought at all. It's everything you ever learned while you're awake on this planet and walking on the earth, whether you be 20 years old or 80 years old. You just start to realize that we're in some kind of really opportune time for this, where we have the expansion of minds. I truly believe that we are in for a conscious leap of consciousness, a quantum leap of consciousness. We are in for that. We are prepared for that. We are ready for that. It's time we evolve. In the next stage of our evolution for humankind is to take our sovereign rights back. To stop the enslavement. But in order for us to do that, we have to be able to recognize what role we play and what role we have played, what we have contributed to society, whether it been something good or bad, and kind of make amends to that. Make amends, clean up our own acts, if you will, and get real.
Right.
And we don't have to, other people don't have to be, doing what I do or Michael Murphy or Clifford Carnicom or a number of people do 24/7, a little a day, 10 minutes a day, 20 minutes a day. This is what we need. This is a great time for humanity because those walls and those veils are coming down. We are starting to see that, at the very least, we are starting to see that something just isn't right. It's just not right. We are wrapped up in, like what I said, this institution of red tape.
Well, I have two more questions I'd like to ask you, Roxy, if I may. Do you think that we've been keeping the war going in Iraq and Afghanistan so we can test out all these new weapons?
I don't know if it's for that purpose. I couldn't even begin to comment on that. I know from studying the Vietnam War, it makes me want to gag what happened with the Vietnamese War and what we did and how we kept it going and Lyndon B. Johnson, et cetera, et cetera. So could it be that we always have some ulterior motive to set up shop? I always questioned what were we doing in Iraq because there's so much oil in Saudi Arabia and Iraq and so forth and so forth. I always questioned that. And when they had the signs, during the, when we took over, the oil for food, right there I was like, oh, my God, that poster just makes me want to throw up. But anyway, oil for food. I was like, oh, my God, they're blatant about it. They're being so obvious about it. But I will say this. I don't know. I don't know what. I'm not a war type political, person that's investigated war and war crimes and so forth and so forth and understands how war works. And, War is a Racket is a good book, but I'm no authority on the matter. But I will say this, something's not right. And something's not right out there. Something's not right with our presence. Something's just not right in the Middle East. Something's not right when our president calls a president of Egypt and says, I think you should step down, or calls Omar Gaddafi and says, I think you should step down. It's time. Something's not right about this.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Who are the players? Who are the players and where did they come from?
Well, I guess the Bilderbergs are involved.
Well, I mean, they're another interesting group, you know. It's that you can't really figure out who's in it, you know. Again, you know, humanity, 99% of humanity just didn't get the memo.
That's right.
Okay? We never got the memo on what's happening. I couldn't tell you.
The last question I'd like to ask you is that do you think that the prediction that 2012 will bring disaster will happen because of all of these weapons and different things that we're doing?
No. No. I love the Mayan philosophy and the Aztec, Hopi, indigenous tribes of the world's philosophies, Buddhism, that all talk about certain events to come, Mayans being 2012. First of all, I don't even know that we're in coming up on the real year 2012, as the Mayans had a different calendar than we do.
Mm-hmm.
That's always been sort of in the back of my mind. Is that really the 2012 they were talking about? But in essence, to answer your question, I do not think that the world's going to end, or that everything's going to escalate to a point of, you know, weapons, you know, just full-blown disaster, man-made disaster, if you will, through the planet. Not through Mayan philosophy, anyway. I don't think that is what they were conveying to us, but I do think this. I think that, again, there's opportunity. I think they were describing a time and a place of a calendar ending for as they saw it. They and all that meant was the visionaries, the Mayan visionaries, just couldn't see past that date. That's all it means. They couldn't see past it. And it could be because it hadn't occurred yet in the not linear time, but in the time-space continuum type vision, you know, the whole perception, perceiving forward. Perhaps it hadn't been equated yet, and so they couldn't see it. I don't know. I do know this. We can choose to do with that passage of time. We can choose to do whatever we want with it. So if it's a time for us to wake up, and if it's a time for us to take back our sovereignty on this planet, if it's time for us to do that, I think that it's an opening to do so. And the powers that be, if they're sort of working with sacred geometry on this or any of that, well, we can too. There's a yin and a yang to everything.
Roxy, I want to thank you for such an interesting interview.